what it is. It's basketball. It's not a f***ing soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. What are we looking at? We are going to have a look at round 16 that was and round 17 in the future. Let's start off with some NBL news. This one coming out of Adelaide by way of Cairns. Adelaide players, I think predominantly Griffin, Randall, Froling, and Johnson, I believe, were verbally assaulted in Cairns at the Gilligan's nightclub or Backpackers, I'm not too sure. It was a verbal exchange with a bit of pushing and shoving, and two locals were arrested. None of the 36ers got in any trouble, no injuries. Doesn't seem like that big of an issue. Next thing, obviously Daniel Johnson turned down from the Boomers selection. Turned down the Boomers selection offer. That's from Felix von Hoff and Peter Hooley from the Trash Talk Sports Bet podcast. I've heard a bit of that, but apparently there's more stuff at play as well, so keep your eye on that, and if I have any more stuff on that, I will let you know. We've had some very nice reviews of the show that I want to mention. The Hoff 82 could be David Hasselhoff himself, still trying to find that out. He writes, great podcast with loads of information on the NBL, doesn't carry on with hot take rubbish. And I want to thank The Hoff because I try to avoid the hot takes. I prefer to think that this podcast gives people NBL cool gives. That's copyrighted, by the way. Next was a review by Stephen Ehring, I believe is how you pronounce it. I hope so. Strangely soothing NBL chat, borderlines on ASMR at times. Autosensory meridian response, I believe that is. Find myself listening every week at work, feel refreshed and invigorated afterwards. Stephen, I thought that was really charming, and it made me feel like my hero, Bob Ross, the painter. And I really appreciate those kind words. If you have a review of the show, good or bad, if you got a bad review, I'll read it out. Why not? If it's funny, I don't care. Let's go in. Let's have a look at the games from this round. First one was an exciting game, an amazing game. New Zealand hosting the Sydney Kings. New Zealand sort of amazingly winning this one, 88-81. Sydney below their scoring average. New Zealand aroundabouts, still low, but Sydney just couldn't score in this game. The Sydney Kings have lost two games this season due to what I would call hubris or underestimating their opponent. This game being one, the fact that they rested Andrew Bogut, and the game before that being when they lost to Illawarra in round 13 at home. No, in Illawarra. They shouldn't have lost these two games, and they could very well come back to bite them. My question coming out of this game, actually going into this game, was, will, or in this case, did Andrew Bogut's absence affect the outcome? My answer, of course it did. Bogut averages 8.5 points per game and is the reigning defensive player of the year. They lost by 7 points. His scoring average, if he just come in and played an average game, would have been enough to beat this team. And I feel like he is a great antidote to the likes of Ashley. Maybe not Rob Lowe because he can shoot from the outside, but still Ashley, Lowe, Delaney, and just anyone coming in the paint. I didn't actually get the points in the paint for this game. Should have got that, but anyway. Yes, he should have played. Would the Kings have lost this game with him? No, I don't think so. Next question then is, does losing this game matter? So can they afford to lose this game? And again, my answer is no. You look at their, so the Sydney Kings are 16-7. Their big competition for the first spot is the Perth Wildcats. Let's do Sydney first. They're now 16-7. They play at Illawarra, which will be a win. They play Melbourne at home, which, depending on how you see Melbourne, is still up in the air. They play at Perth. That's a loss. I don't think they win that game. They play at Southeast Melbourne. Bit of a doozy team for them. They beat them convincingly this round, but maybe things change when they travel. And then Illawarra. So they've still got a pretty soft landing with the likes of Southeast Melbourne, who are, you know, second bottom. Illawarra, who are the bottom twice. It's that Melbourne game and the Perth game. Let's say they beat every game except for Perth, which I don't think they're going to win. So that gives them 1, 2, 3, 4 wins, takes them from 16-7 to 20-7. The Perth Wildcats, on the other hand, play New Zealand at home. They should win that game. They play at Melbourne. Are we thinking they win that game? That's their one kind of doozy for them. Then they play Sydney at home, which I think Sydney will lose. They play Brisbane at home, and they play Adelaide at home. Adelaide have beaten Perth in Perth, but I don't think they do it again. So if Perth go and sweep all the way through all their home games and win in Melbourne, they're going to finish with a 20-8 record. Goes to percentage, the Perth Wildcats are currently on 1.05%, the Kings on 1.06%. You're relying on the worst offensive team in the league, or the second worst offensive team in the league, in the Kings, getting a better percentage than the Wildcats. Obviously, the Kings play Illawarra twice, and Southeast Melbourne, who normally you can put up a bit of points from and certainly push through. I mean, Melbourne gave up a lot of points. So the question is there, is they're probably going to finish on the same record unless Perth drop one at home to Adelaide or Melbourne, what have you. So does it matter? Yes, it matters. If they'd won this game, they would have been far and away number one seed and it's over. But now you just have that little bit of anxiety creep back into the number one spot. Now, what I've been hearing a lot about is that it was the travel for Andrew Bogut, who admittedly has not just played this NBL season, but the NBA season before and China. The NBA season before, I don't know how difficult that was. Played in a few games, didn't see huge minutes, but did have to travel. But NBA travel on a private jet, most people would consider that a fun weekend, just not so much grueling, taxing work. And then the bus from Plymouth. Well, let's all break all this down. It's a 3-hour flight from Sydney to Auckland, which I believe is the closest major airport in New Zealand. So it's 3 hours, one way. It's then, while they took a bus from Auckland, presumably Auckland to New Plymouth, you can fly from Auckland to New Plymouth. It's a 50-minute flight, and it costs $83. So 4 hours travel, which is a decent amount of time. That's if you watch Titanic with the credits. Let's say you wanted to go one further and book a private jet for four people. I know that sounds a bit outrageous, but let's do it. A private jet. I couldn't find anything in New Zealand, but I was able to find what it is in the UK, which is comparable. Now, whether they actually have private jets in New Zealand, I would think so, but I don't know for sure. A private jet for four people from London to Manchester costs $5,000 Australian, and it's a similar length trip, 361 kilometers from Auckland to New Plymouth, and it's about 335 between London and Manchester, and they do that in 40 minutes. Now, I'm all for load management. I understand the principle. If you play less, you can play longer and better without injury. It's the same principles. If you don't drive your car as much, it will go further the next time you drive. You're conserving fuel. It's not a particularly complicated scientific formula. But does load management have to come at the expense of games, especially in the 28-game schedule of the NBL? And was this the best game to choose? The Breakers were running hot. Yes, there was a decent travel concern, but my thought is, see the forest for the trees. If you're looking at Andrew Bogut and say, oh, we don't want him sitting on a bus for 5 hours, well, that's fine. Put him on a flight, if it's possible. Now, I don't know if it's possible or not, but there's more than one way to skin a cat. Hell, if you're worried about him sitting in a bus seat, hire some UberX driver and say, we can put a mattress in the back and Bogut can lie down for the bus ride. I don't know. I think all of those are more attractive alternatives, and shilling out a few bucks is more an attractive alternative than him missing this game, them losing this game, and losing top spot. And why is it important they get top spot? Well, I'll tell you. Of the last 30 NBL Finals series, 3-0, the home team has won 25 of those series. That's 83%. If you walk into a casino with $1 million, and someone says to me, you can bet on something at 83%, that is the highest probability you will ever see in a game of chance anywhere that's professional. 83% of the time. It's not a sure bet. Yes, and maybe people are right when they say a healthy Andrew Bogut is more important. But I look at that 83% and I say, I don't think a healthy Andrew Bogut makes up for that 17% variation in that. Can't go with it. 32 of the 41 NBL champions have been the home team. Again, that's 78%, almost 80. You're hoping that if they don't go on from here to win the top spot, you're hoping to be part of that 17% and part of that 22%. I don't like the odds, and I don't think anyone with a calculator or abacus or 10 fingers and 10 toes likes those maths as well. Let's have a look at the fourth quarter. New Zealand scored 20 points total, Sydney Kings 11. Tate fouled out. Jayshon Tate was having a very nice game. Fouled out at the 7 minute and 32 second mark. The score was 68-74. The Kings go scoreless until the 3 minute and 42 second mark. So they go 3 minutes and 50 seconds. And I didn't actually jot down how many possessions it was. But let's say each possession from either team is a full 24-hour shot clock, which it wasn't. That means that the Kings went scoreless for 9 straight possessions. That's, it, of course, if the clock is taken full. And you probably think it's more, it's anywhere between 9 and 18. They were shooting it sort of mid, sometimes they go early, sometimes they go late. So they went scoreless for anywhere from 9 to 18 possessions. Let's sit at, say, 12 or 13. 12 or 13 times down the court, a professional basketball team couldn't score. That is a lot of times to have a shot and it not go in. The Kings shot 24.1% from the three-point line. Not good. And that was due to, you know, the Kings' inability to hit it, but also the switchability of the breakers. When you've got guys like Delaney at power forward, who can really switch out there, and Ashley and Lowe to a much lesser extent, but certainly those two, you've got something going there. Scotty Hobson was amazing, 30 points, 50%, hung points on everyone. Bruce, Luzada was his number one opponent, Newley, Cooks even a little bit, a killer in the pick and roll, was just baiting guys, was going over hesitation dribbles, retreat dribbles, going forward. He played a really fantastic game. I would have liked to see more of Xavier Cooks on Hobson, just throw a bigger body at him, someone who can just be a little bit more obstructive over those screens. I don't know. As I said, it was predominantly Luzada. Let's go on from this game. Perth versus Southeast Melbourne. Perth smacked them. I won't talk about this team too much. Southeast Melbourne just cannot play in the West. It almost speaks to my last point of how important home court advantage is. I think NBL Facts put up a very interesting little thing about what would happen if all the games remaining went to the home team. And it would have Perth on top. Obviously, Sydney play in Illawarra a couple of times that they'll win. But home court is a thing. And what I find, sorry to digress, going back to my old point, but when people say, oh, it's better to have a healthy Andrew Bogut, that completely negates everyone going on about home cooking this season. I've heard home cooking more times than I've had home cooked meals. So if home cooking is such a problem with the reffing, and Will Weaver's been a big sort of critic of this as well when he had that huge explosion in Melbourne against the United. If it's such a big deal and so prevalent and such a mistake to the league, why would you run any chance of coming up against it in the finals and grand final if you make it that far? But sorry, to digress, going back to Perth, Southeast Melbourne. The Wildcats, I think this is the best team in NBL basketball, very closely followed by the Sydney Kings, but their ability to switch out on offense and defense, I think they're the number one offensive team and the fifth defensive team for from Spatial Jam. Miles Plumlee in this game only played 16 minutes, got denied with a huge block on Pinot. We've all seen it on social media. Robertson was the only starter in double figures for the Southeast Melbourne. He had 11. Pinot was the only starter to shoot over 37.5%. He shot 100% from the field, but everyone else shot below 40. Yikes. Creek and Ty Wesley combined for 13 points, 7 rebounds, 4 of 19 from the field. That's 21% for 5 turnovers. Brutal. That's what this Wildcat team does to, in particular, this team, but a lot of teams as well. Let's jump on to the next game. Let's not focus on that. Perth and Perth, that's going to happen. Brisbane Bullets host the Illawarra Hawks. Brisbane won this one 106-77. Let's not go into too much detail on this one. The Hawks are struggling. The Bullets are coming up. It was not much of a surprise to anyone. Number one point, the Bullets are much better than the Hawks. Number two point, the Bullets did not underestimate them. However, the Bullets got a sense of the game in the first half. It played pretty close in the first half. And then made the adjustments in the second half, outscoring the Hawks 59-30. In the second half, the athletic bigs of the Bullets combined for 27 points, 13 of 15 from the field, that's 87%, 14 rebounds, and 6 blocks. Will Magnay had all of them. Whereas the big guys for the Hawks, and in this conversation, and those bigs I mean Magnay and Hodgson, and for the Hawks I mean Ogilvy and Boone, combined for 4 points, 2 of 12 from the field, that's 17%. 11 rebounds and 0 blocks. what I see with the Bullets is the value of athletic bigs in this league, and I think just basketball in general, the ability to aggressively contest shots and finish with through contact at the hole. One is good, the other is not. Let's not dwell on it. Let's go straight on to the next one. Cairns versus Adelaide. They hosted Adelaide, winning 108-91. This is the game that afterward we had troubles on the street, whatever happened there. I thought this was a really poor showing from the 36ers, and as a result, I've put a line through them as the fourth spot contender. I now see that spot going to either the Brisbane Bullets or the New Zealand Breakers. Poor showing from the 36ers, beaten 30 points to 18 in quarter one. It wasn't like they hung around and lost. They came out, they got smacked in the mouth, and just, it was like a dog with a rolled up newspaper, just no, hit them on the nose, no, stop contending to win this match. And they complied. Machado, Newell, and Oliver all had 20 points plus. Randall had a very nice game, almost a triple-double, 20 points, 10 and 10, almost. But Eric Griffin just didn't get the time. 11 minutes, 3 points, 0 rebounds, 3 turnovers. He got taken out of the game, and I was kind of watching everything else, and this game just didn't have any fuel. They didn't have anything going for them in this game. And I think, I don't know if Griffin got taken out because he just wasn't getting it done, or he batted heads with Joey, maybe both, I don't know. But he played 11 minutes and he just wasn't there. But even when he was on the court, look at those stats, he wasn't getting it done. Cairns shot 56% from the field. Adelaide shot 37. Botty Nodge, friend of the program. If you're listening out there, definitely subscribe to the Brad and Botty Basketball Podcast. Great podcast out there, and you get WNBL and NBL. But he writes on his website, botinagy.com. This loss exposed, this is a quote, this loss exposed them as probable frauds, masquerading as playoff wannabes, but lacking the heart, commitment, and or desire to do the tough things required to achieve such a goal. I would go into further talk about this game, but I think that sentence sums it all up. And other than Daniel Johnson, who had a really nice game and a career high in points, and Randall, who was a nice player, there just wasn't enough at any other position. And hopefully they can do better next round. But I think their final four chances are gone because they can't win on the road and in big games. New Zealand hosted the Melbourne United. This is the game that everyone's going to be talking about this round. The United lost every quarter, the worst being quarter one by 8 points. It was just a genuine, just all the way through. There was no adjustment. They went down, they stayed down. Next quarter, okay, kept doing the same things that got them in trouble the quarter before. Not a good sign for Vickerman. I would love to see them come out and get pressure. We've all, if you haven't seen NBL Overtime, Liam Santamaria goes into this in depth on the TV screen, just showing the lack of communication defensively, the lack of energy late, you know, in a desperate attempt to save their season. They're not pushing up full court, but definitely that's Overtime. Check that out. Let's talk about Mallow Trimble. Trimble continues his shooting struggles. 12 points, 4 of 12, 33%. Not a horrible game. Hit his first two, but we expect to be Mallow Trimble to be around the 20 and around the 40 or 50 mark percentage-wise. Over the last five games, Trimble's averaging 10 points per game, 32% shooting. He's normally, you know, double both of those percentages. Not quite percentage shooting, but close. The defense was terrible. The shooting was bad, but the disconnect or lack of flow from one to the other was even worse. There was no sort of, oh, we've finally got to stop, let's transition into offense. That didn't happen. And there was never a moment where the offense kind of, where they'd score a basket or not score a basket and kick into their defense. It was just so, it was such a mechanical game from United, and they were beaten so handily by a team that was so role-defined, so aggressive, so purposeful. And United didn't have that. But, however, with United, all the bad culture, bad locker room stuff has come out. No major detail. I haven't heard anyone get anyone on record, be it Vickerman or Golding or Long or Trimble, McCarron, Barlow, whoever you want. No one has come out and got anyone on record or even really explain the comments. Like, I've had a number of people in private messages reach out to me and say, oh, they're, they don't do this, they don't do that. And I said, well, what gives you that impression? And it's all sort of, oh, you know, the way Golding speaks in press conferences. I'm like, some of the best people give off the worst impressions. So I'm not too sure. But let's look at their rival or their competitor in this game, New Zealand Breakers. They started the game, started the season with 2 wins, 8 losses. All the talk was how bad the culture was. Some of that deserved the Glenn Rice in particular. But as I stated on podcast before, Glenn Rice was an injury replacement. He's not a part of the Breakers. He was there for 2 weeks. If he'd been there for the whole term of it, he would have been there for a month. So to say that because he was bad, anyway, I've gone to that 1,000 times. They start the season 2 wins, 8 losses. All the talk of the bad culture comes. Then they go 7-2 and the talk disappears. And my thought is, you're either a bad locker room person, you're either a bad chemistry guy, or you're not. It seems that though the bad culture mark comes out of losing. But that's not really what a split locker room or a bad culture, that's not what that is. Either you're a bad person or you're not. And I would have thought it would present itself when you're winning, losing, or even just being mediocre. So Melbourne start the year okay. They go on a 6-0 winning streak, beating Sydney in the process. A little bit of conjecture about the calls there, but nonetheless, beat them. And now that they're on a losing streak, and the talk is how bad these guys are character-wise. Losing breeds discontent. Winning heals all wounds. There are most, the winning teams have a horrible locker room, or can do, and it's not so bad. This team's problem, I don't think, is off the court. I really just think it's an on-court problem. They're not clicking. They're not playing different. The other question is, Paul Hanare, and this was something that brought up on the Brad and Body podcast that I listened to earlier. Paul Hanare left early, I think 2 games into the season, so it's hard to get a gauge on this. But when Matt Nielsen didn't re-sign with the Perth Wildcats, all the talk was, oh, wow, they've Perth Wildcats are in trouble. They've lost that counterweight to Gleeson. Paul Hanare? Anyone? Anything? I know he didn't play for the Boomers, but and that seems to be the sort of the mark of whether an assistant coach is good or imperative to a team is whether they've played for the Boomers or not. But nonetheless, I wonder what effect his absence has had on this team. And my next question as well is, if Trimble and Long are such bad culture guys, because that's who it's being directed at, let's not kid around, why didn't it present itself in both New Zealand Breakers or Cairns Taipans at the time they both played? Both teams wanted to re-sign them. And again, as I was saying, or at the beginning of this season with Melbourne United, why even though they were winning, why weren't people saying, oh, but yeah, they're winning, but oh, the culture's not good. You can still win and have a bad culture, I would have thought. Seems like a bad culture is easier to wipe away than a watermark. It just gets me bothered, the import bashing, and some things never change. And I understand that with any NBL team, you can't trade players one to the other. So the only flexibility you have in season are your imports or a few injury replacements or a cut and a few signings. But it just feels a little unfair to both Trimble and Long, who at times have played very well this year. And I don't think they're the problem here. I mean, as I was saying before, the amount of private messages I've got and the caliber has been, I think I put this up on Twitter, has been when, I don't know who Billy Madison's rival is, that old guy who he competes against in college, but when the janitor comes to him and has done reconnaissance on Billy Madison, he's like, you know, Sean Long's car is green. Mello Trimble likes to drink soda. That's sort of how vague some of this stuff has been. But let's have a look at something else. The ages, right? The ages of the Melbourne United starting five. The youngest is Mello Trimble, 24 years old, younger than Emmett Nah, which I've talked about. Sean Long is 26 years old, so a year or so off prime. And then you've got Mitch McCarron, 27 years old. Chris Golding, 31 years old. David Barlow, 36 years old. Looking at this from a non-sporting, from a humanistic level, Barlow and Golding, they're your mature statesmen. They are this team. They've been there for years. They are this team more so than Mello Trimble and Sean Long have been there less than 6 months. But yet we jump on Sean Long and Mello Trimble. Interesting, don't you think? If I can be honest, the worst body language is coming off CG43, and I don't think that's because he's a bad person or a quitter or anything like that. I just feel like he takes losing at the end of games like Sean Long does when he doesn't score and something like that. I think he shows it very palpably in his interviews at halftime, have been sort of very hands on hips and whatever. And I feel like he's their best player. He's the guy. So I'd like to see them turn it around. Next thing that I'm hearing out there is the condemnation of the spending. Oh, they spent so much, they should be good. Well, first thing, if you're going to condemn the United for what they've spent on the roster, then you must know what they are paying them, and then you must also know what other teams are paying them. So I haven't brought that up and said, oh, they must have spent a lot of money, because I don't know exactly what they've spent, nor do I know what they've spent relative to the rest of the league. So when people say that to me, like, oh, they spent a lot of money, I'm like, oh, great, you know how much the teams are on. Hold the phone while I get a pen and pad. I'm not so sure that's the case. Otherwise, reveal it. Send it to me in a private message at mblpocketpodcast@gmail.com. I'll write it down. Second, so what if they spend a lot? This is the symptom of sports having a cap, which is an odd concept where you cap spending, which is not at all sort of the sort of, to speak widely, the sort of democratic world that we live in, where if you want to spend money on something or as much money as you want, you can. But anyway, when I hear people condemning United for spending, I think I don't like to do that. They took a risk. They made a change. They're trying to do something interesting and it didn't work out. And it just seems this weird logic of how dare you take that financial risk in an attempt to entertain the basketball going public of Melbourne. I don't... you know, the thought of you tried to spend and win and it didn't work and you owe us is an objectively immoral principle. It'd be different if this team was taking the piss and not giving effort, which maybe some people out there think. And that's, you know, if you've seen it that way, that's probably okay. But I honestly believe that this United team is trying. It's just the pieces aren't quite fit. And that's where the frustration's coming from. And that's where people think locker room problem. I just see frustration from a result of not winning and not clicking. The second thing is people said, oh, but this United team had huge expectations. Well, yes, we all saw them as one of the big three. But remember, they're only, a little bit off Cairns for that third spot. So while they have underachieved, it's relative to Cairns, not so much Perth and Sydney. Because let's have a think about this. Before the season started, Perth had Bryce Cotton, a former MVP, and Nick Kay, an NBL first teamer, and Cotton himself, an NBL first teamer. So they had two of those. Sydney... had the reigning MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, and two NBL first teamers in Casper Ware and Andrew Bogut himself. Melbourne have two all NBL second teamers. So you just look at those three teams and you straight away know on paper that, oh yeah, those other two teams are more talented. The question is, could they have been better than Cairns? And the answer is probably yes. But they're not. And then also what I love about Perth fans, and bless your hearts out there if you're listening, they're very good at casting themselves as the underdog. I mean, you have Bryce Cotton on your team. That's like the Bulls of Chicago in the heyday of the 90s being like, well, you know, you have the best player in the NBL, categorically the best player in the NBL on your team, as well as a really well-performing boomer, Tirico White, who's perennially underrated. He's the most underrated player in the NBL, quietly, but that's a topic for another day. Yeah, so Perth fans, Perth and people in the media, very good at casting Perth as the underdog. Which is the ultimate irony, because obviously they're wild cats and that's strange that they'd be the underdog. Oh, bother. Next game of the round, ignore that. Next game of the round, Sydney Kings host the South East Melbourne Phoenix. Sydney winning this one 98-81. Big win, return to form for them. This loss takes South East Melbourne out of contention. Bogut, having been load managed, and gentlemen out there, it's very important to manage your load, look much better in this game. So I'm not contending with the load management strategy, just the implementation. I'm not making excuses for South East Melbourne, but I think they're breaking down. Mitch Creek has got these niggling injuries. Simon Mitchell's talked about it in his press conferences. Ty Wesley has come back, and it feels like he's still working on it. He looks a bit tender around the hole. Again, it does feel like I'm making excuses for this team, but nonetheless. And then Adam Gibson didn't play in this game. He's been a huge absence. I'm really surprised at how big a... no offense to Adam Gibson, but how big a loss he's been in their rotational schemes. Sydney holds South East Melbourne to 30 points in the paint. That's the Bogut effect. 30 points in the paint. You know, you've got Ty Wesley, great post player. Dane Pinot, killer on the boards.
Mitch Creek, best attack at the hole. Even, you know, sort of Kyle Adnam, a couple of other people. 30 points in the paint. That's the Andrew Bogut effect. Sydney Kings, on the other hand, shot 63% from the two-point field goals. And knowing their team, most of them were in the Kiwi. Huge discrepancy. Sydney holds Southeast Melbourne to 9 assists. You can just see them forcing them into one-on-one stuff, in particular that fourth quarter where they outscored them by 10 and just really just blew this game away, holding Robertson to very little, not only in the fourth quarter, but the whole second half after he'd got off in the first. And he has a habit of doing that. But that was it. And that, everyone, is the game's rounds. Been real busy this week, so trying to get everything sorted, but nice and quick. Let's jump on to sort of an NBL around the horn chat. And the big thing, I guess, is Corey Homicide's tweet, where he put out his picks for the NBL first team and a few awards. Let's look through his awards. So he gave all NBL first team at this point of the season to Scott Machado, Bryce Cotton, Scotty Hobson, Jayshon Tate, Sean Long. And if I can talk about that quickly, I think that's a pretty good list. There's a conversation for Creek versus Hobson. And really think about this out there. Has Hobson's last half of the season, or since his return from injury, which is about halfway, has that been better than Creek's start to the season? Creek was, like, he was amazing and they were winning games. He's tapered off. Hobson's come up. So really tough, difficult decision to have to yourself. I'd probably lean towards Hobson and stay with Homicide, but I could definitely hear a conversation on Creek. And then Jayshon Tate, I'm a little uncomfortable with having an All-NBL first teamer in there for a positional thing. Like, don't get me wrong, Tate makes sense at that spot, but he's not the best player on Sydney. I do think that's Casper Ware. So I'd put Lamar Patterson in there. I think he's had a so-so start to the year when he got himself in shape, and now he's been their best. And he's, you know, I see this All-NBL first team as kind of being like, who's the most valuable five guys from their team? And that's why I would put Patterson over Tate. And then I would have Cam Oliver over Sean Long. I feel like he's just been the best big in the NBL. Had a couple of off games, but Sean Long has, you know, really struggled at times, and they're not winning as many games. So I'd have Oliver over Sean Long. But again, I'm not hugely offended by Sean Long being in that. If he won the All-NBL first team starting center, Sean Long, I wouldn't be surprised with that or upset. Defensive player of the year. This is an interesting one. Homicide put DJ Newble. I think it's got to be Andrew Bogut. I mean, they are the best defensive team in the league, and he is their best defensive player. The other one I hear a conversation about is Casper Ware, but I think it's Andrew Bogut. When he's on the floor, they are a beast defensively. Most improved player, I talked about this last week. I think it is Dane Pinot. I agree with Homicide on that one. MVP, pretty obvious with this one. I don't think it's Scott Machado. I think it's Bryce Cotton. I think they have the better record. He's had some amazing games and set to have even more, I think. He's the kind of guy I just bet on. You know, he's had game winners. He's had big performances in losses, in wins. You know, he's just, and he's had a really good patient year this year. A lot more distribution, a lot more ball handling in the second half and the fourth quarter. There's a gentleman online who spoke about this. So sorry, I've forgotten his name, but he does good stuff. So Bryce Cotton for me is the MVP. Coach of the year. Corey Homicide Williams has Mike Kelly. I say Trevor Gleeson. Think about what they've done. They had a really tough start to the year, won a few games, made a huge personnel change mid-year. So did the Kings, I suppose, who's the other contender for this one, Will Weaver. They sort of had Lish go down and brought in Taylor, but with Hunt and changing this team around and a few minor injuries, I just feel like it's Gleeson. I feel like they're probably going to finish on top, or if not really, really close to it. And I don't see a problem with giving it to someone like Trevor Gleeson, who's just coached so impeccably hard this whole year. Like, he hasn't let up. That team, when they're at home, they're really, really good when they play. And, you know, they've killed Southeast Melbourne. They've killed Illawarra. Like, and that's a lot of Gleeson having that team totally prepared and sharpened to a knife's point. Sixth man of the year. Sean Bruce is Homicide's pick. I thought it would have to be Eric Griffin, wouldn't it? He's started only 9 of the 23 games this year, which makes him eligible because you've got to play start less than half, and that's less than half, and I don't think he's going to come into the starting lineup towards the end of the year. And even if he did, he'd still qualify. That would put him at 14 of 28, so he'd still qualify. Eric Griffin, like, I think he's sort of 21st in points at about 15 a game. He's had some huge blocks. He's had some huge rebounds. He's had, you know, some big, big games, 20, 30 points. And Sean Bruce has been great, and it feels brutal to leave him off this list, but I think Eric Griffin's the best sixth man, and if you want to make the case for him most improved, you can do that, but I go with Pinot. That is Corey Homicide's picks. Let's jump on to round 17. Six games coming up in this round, which is a nice, healthy, manageable amount of games. First game, Brisbane host Southeast Melbourne in Brisbane. I'm going with Brisbane at this one. At home, Brisbane have a good record and they play well. And I just feel like Magnay and Hodgson have become such a handful. They've really worked out how to play with each other. And Dane Pinot and Wesley are going to have trouble with that. Second game of the round, Illawarra hosts the Sydney Kings. The Sydney Kings are going to win that game. Third game of the round, Adelaide host the Brisbane Bullets. Whew, this is a tough one. Do Brisbane have the ability to travel from or play a game, travel in Brisbane and head to Adelaide, where Adelaide are 7 wins, 4 losses at home? And I feel like you look at the talent on Adelaide, they are good, but they seem to only really have the mental fortitude to win at home. So for that reason, I've liked Adelaide this year, and I think they're going to win this game. But that was a tough one. Tough one to pick. Perth play the New Zealand Breakers at the RAC Arena in West Australia. Perth are going to win this game. It's just too far for New Zealand to travel. That's a huge trip. And also, I think Plumlee is an antidote to the likes of Lowe and Ashley. And I think that Nick Kay is the ultimate antidote to Finn Delaney. Look for those guys to, you know, not make their... Go the under on those guys points-wise. I just feel that those two are such a handful. And that's why I think the Perth Wildcats will win. Southeast Melbourne, fifth game of the round. Southeast Melbourne hosts the Cairns Taipans. Ooh, toughie. You know, Southeast Melbourne is slipping real bad. Really bad. And they're coming off a game in Brisbane. I've actually got written down here Southeast Melbourne, but no, that's not right. And I know Cairns only have a road record of 3 wins, 7 losses, but... Nah, I think they win this game. When Cairns come up against teams that don't play any defense, they seem to go pretty well. So I'm changing that to Cairns. I think they win, especially seeing as how South East Melbourne's on the second of a back-to-back. Last game of the round. Boy. Whew. This is the business. Sydney Kings host the Melbourne United in Kudos Bank Arena in New South Wales. Wow. Most people probably wouldn't be pondering this very much, but I am. I mean, Melbourne really got their ass handed to them, and it seems kind of like we give this team... this team has had so many second chances. This is like the drug addict of the NBL, where it's like, all right, yeah, I know you stole from me, but here's a couple of bucks. Yes, you can stay in the spare room, and you wake up, and you've been stripped down to your jocks, and the ice cube tray is missing from the freezer, and you got nothing left, and your radio's had the guts pulled out of it, and the couch cushions have been cut up to see if there's any loose change or cash. That's this United team. They've had that many second chances. There's been talk of Prather banging around in trainings and things. Be interesting to see if he plays. But even if he does, call me nuts. In Sydney, oh, they can't win this game, can they? Nah, I'm believing this team. I think they're good. Like, even without Prather and with the team they've got, they have Mello Trimble, who's a good player. They have McCarron, who's a good player. They have Golding. I think this team finally just starts putting the ball in the hole. I hope Mello Trimble, against all odds, in the game when he with Casper Ware defending him, should have the worst game. I'm going with my heart, not my head, on this. The head says Sydney, but I just thought that loss was really bad, and I feel like this team, I've got too much faith in the leaders of that team, Dave Barlow, Golding, and McCarron. I feel like they're the leaders of that team. I've got too much faith in them to pull apart and not pull together, and... they looked real sad and sorry against New Zealand, no doubt about it. But I think this is the game, and I'm tipping them. As I've got written here, no white rabbit from the hat magical trick. I just think they play better and hopefully start Kidd over Barlow. I feel like that might be a needed change. It'd be very interesting to see if Vickerman's going to make some sort of change. And I feel like that's the most obvious change to make. Barlow's a guy at his age who can take... the role changed late this season. If you did it to Golding like they did last year, I think his head would drop, or McCarron or Trimble or Long, especially if you did it to those two, that the head would drop and it's over. But Barlow's the guy you can make that change to. And I think with Kidd there, they just become a little bit more switchy, a little bit more dynamic defensively. But then again, Tate was going to kill anyone. But that's who I'm going with. I'm going to Melbourne United. Guys, thanks very much for listening. Guys and girls, thanks very much. And I'll be back next week with more episodes. And hopefully I have a little bit more time to dedicate. Testy pop. How embarrassing. I'll be back next week with more to talk about. And but great slew of games. And like, subscribe, blah, blah, blah. Find me on Twitter at NBL Pocket Podcast, or on Gmail, NBL Pocket Podcast at gmail.com. If you have a question or query. I think there's a Facebook page, but does anyone use Facebook anymore? Thanks very much.